All right then, welcome everyone. Today's talk will be about two important concepts in the Buddha's teaching. These are karma and rebirth. Now I say these are important concepts, and I think this is a debated statement. Many people seem to think that karma and rebirth have nothing to do with the Buddha's teaching, most especially the teaching on rebirth. There's a lot of belief that the Buddha taught only for one life and nothing to do with the idea of rebirth. But really, these sorts of debates, I think, center around our attachment to views, our opinions and views of what the Buddha taught, rather than actual understanding of reality. Because when you practice the Buddha's teaching, it really makes no difference as to what is one's opinion or the idea of what it was that the Buddha taught or so on. And whether the Buddha taught about rebirth, about past lives or future lives, there's no argument that arises, because through the practice you come to see for yourself the reality of things. And what we come to see when we practice the Buddha's teaching and understand the reality of things is that really, in a way, the Buddha didn't teach karma and rebirth in their standard form. Because the word karma means action, and the doctrine of karma means the belief that every action that we do has an effect. Has a effect on our happiness and our unhappiness. Either that, or certain actions, when performed, have an effect on our happiness and our unhappiness in and of themselves. And this was the doctrine that was understood to be the truth by many people before the time of the Buddha. And it was taught by the Brahmins, the priests. And the reason it was taught by them, it seems, is because this was a very profitable thing to teach. When you teach people that certain ritual actions are to their benefit, for either warding off evil or bringing blessings and so on. And those actions were actions that required a priest to perform, then it was a great way to make your living. And so this evolved into an entire doctrine based on these sacrifices that the Brahmins did. It was also, prior to the establishment of the priestly caste or group, it seems it was a part of the nomadic culture of the Aryans, these people who came in and slaughtered all the natives in India. When they won a battle, they would always offer something to their god, to Indra. And you can see this, of course, in all nomadic or native culture, not native, tribal cultures. This idea of sacrifice, you can see it in Judaism, in the Old Testament, the Hebrew Bible. This idea that some certain activities had benefit. And the Buddha taught against this. This was the teaching that the Buddha had to replace, because obviously it's not For those of us who have an intellectual or a scientific understanding of reality, we can see and we can verify for ourselves through experimentation, through research, through empirical observation, that this isn't the truth, that these actions don't actually have any intrinsic benefit. And so what the Buddha taught as karma, and he just borrowed the word, he really didn't teach karma at all, he taught intention, he taught jetana. And he said that what these people are talking about with the word karma is actually, the truth of it is that it is the job, it is the role of jetana, of one's intention, one's volition. When one has wholesome intentions, it doesn't matter what one does, if one's mind has wisdom in it or has the desire to sacrifice or love in it or so on, then everything one does with that mind, based on that mind, the result of that mind, the result of that karma, that mental action, will inevitably be positive. And so this is the Buddha's doctrine of karma. It's a very simple doctrine, and it's very scientific. Because in understanding both karma and rebirth, we have to understand the nature of reality according to the Buddha, according to the Buddha's teaching. That the Buddha, again, didn't talk about reality as something out there. He talked about two kinds of reality, this conceptual reality that we talk about, the universe. You might even talk about Second Life as a conceptual reality, in the same way that the world around us is a conceptual reality. So we can talk about the Deer Park, we can talk about the hall, the meditation hall up there, the store, the hot spring, the mountain, and so on. But these are all just concepts. They don't really exist. But we use them to refer these places to other people. And we do the same with the world around us. We refer to countries and cities and places, this three-dimensional reality that is out there and has actually been shown to be only merely conceptual by modern physics. That reality can only be thought of in terms of events, in terms of experience. And this is very much the Buddha's teaching, that all of reality is dependent on the mind. There's the physical side of reality, but it is only encompassed by experience. The ultimate reality of it is the experience of it. When we experience the physical reality around us, seeing it, hearing it, smelling it, tasting it, feeling it, thinking it, this is what's real. And so our experience of reality will define the results that we receive. If we choose to direct our minds in a certain direction, that's the reality that arises will be based on that action, on that intention. When we talk about karma, it's not something magical or mystical where someone kills someone and then you sit around waiting for them to be hit by lightning or something. Or even sit around waiting for them to go, smug in the fact that they're going to go to hell or so on. It's actually not a cut and dry doctrine in that way. You can't say that if a person does all sorts of bad things, they're necessarily going to go to hell. That's unscientific. Because it's a simplistic sort of magical pseudoscientific understanding or belief, this idea that certain things automatically lead you to certain results. And that's unscientific. We can say that certain intentions incline in a certain direction, but other than that, unless we can somehow take into account all the other factors involved, right? Our intention, you know, our past intentions, the direction we're heading, and so on, then we can't really make those kinds of claims as to what a certain act is going to, what effect it's going to have. It's like weather. You can look at a certain weather pattern and say, oh, this is going to create a different weather pattern, and then the results come out completely different because there are so many different factors involved that you can't possibly take into account. You can only offer probabilities unless you have some super advanced understanding of all of the different variables and factors involved in the process. So the teaching of karma really is that, basically, in a basic understanding, is that bad things have a bad effect on our lives. That's why they're bad. Certain things, certain intentions will have a bad result, or will incline towards a bad result. Certain things will incline towards a good result, will it lead to our benefit. And so if we understand karma in this way, we can really understand the details of the doctrine. We can understand how it works, and we can see that it's actually not a cut and dry thing, where all we can say is that certain things are unadvisable because they're dangerous. They have the potential to lead to our suffering. So first, on a phenomenological or an experiential level, there are four kinds of karma. This is based on our every moment of the experience. Every karma that we perform, when we get angry, when we have greed in our minds or so on, when we give rise to these unwholesome states, they will have four results. One of them, one kind, will actually give rise to a specific result. Certain acts that we perform will give a result. Sometimes when you do something bad or you do something good, right away you experience the result. Actually, this is generally the case, that most of the things we do have a immediate result, and it's just that we don't see it or we don't understand the relationship between the two. For instance, when you are generous with someone, you give them something, or you offer your time to them, or your kind words, or so on, you'll find that right away you feel good about yourself. You feel calm, you feel happy, you feel proud in a sense, or you feel good about what you've done. And that's the direct result that comes from the good karma. But certain times we'll do something and we're expecting a result of a certain sort, and we don't get that result. In fact, sometimes it isn't the case where we give something to someone. Sometimes we can give or be generous towards someone or do something good one of the various ways and get a bad result. You know, we give something to someone and they become upset because of it. Maybe we don't give them what they wanted, or you know, you give a person on the street, you give them a dollar bill, and they get angry and they wanted more or so on. Maybe you give them $1 and then all of a sudden their friend comes and wants another dollar or so on. And you feel upset by it. So only certain types of karma will give a direct result. Other types of karma have the effect of supporting the arising of results. So sometimes we'll do something and it doesn't give us a good result right away, or it doesn't give us a bad result right away, but as we perform the same action again and again, or repeatedly perform wholesome or unwholesome actions, the accumulation of the evil deeds or the good deeds leads to the result of the action. leads to the bad result or the good result. This is called supportive karma. Sometimes it's required to do the same act again and again, or to perform multiple acts in order to bring about a result. If supporting factors aren't present, then sometimes our good deeds won't come to good results. So the point is that we shouldn't feel upset when good deeds don't always lead to good results, or also not be negligent when our bad deeds don't always lead to bad results. Sometimes they're just waiting for the accumulation of bad deeds. Sometimes all it takes is one, like the straw that broke the camel's back.